Getting the smile and confidence you've been dreaming about, all from the comfort of your home, isn't a total mystery with Bite Clear Aligners. Just don't be surprised if all your friends start asking, "What's your secret?" Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. Bite Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Delve into the shadows of the mind with Sleeping Dogs, a gripping murder mystery starring Academy Award winner Russell Crowe. Now available on digital. Crowe portrays an ex-homicide detective unraveling a brutal murder he can't recall. Uncovering secrets from his past, he learns a chilling truth. It's best to let sleeping dogs lie. Visit sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery to watch Sleeping Dogs, now on digital. That's sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery.
Welcome to the Seed Pod, a series from Completely Arbitrary, where we have tree-related discussions with tree-related people. And this week, we are honored to host a legend in our world. He is the author and illustrator of many books on birds and trees alike, including the canonical Sibley Guide to Trees. We have David Allen Sibley. We were able to meet with David by complete chance, and we were so excited, if not a little nervous, so we decided to come up with a gimmick to make ourselves feel more at ease. And we had a lot of fun with David. He is the sweetest guy and so, so knowledgeable about both birds and trees. And it was so cool to get to talk to him, to get to hear and see the full discussion later this week. Become a premium member at arbitrarypod.supercast.com. But until then, after a short break, please enjoy our discussion with David Allen Sibley. Hi, everybody. Or should I say, hola a todos. I want you to hear something. It's this. Yes, that is the sound of learning a new language with Babbel. You have, of course, heard of Babbel. You've maybe even used Babbel. But if you haven't, Babbel is an app that helps you learn languages. Babbel is a science-backed learning language app that actually works. Let me put it this way. I knew somebody who used a different language app for 365 days and still could not even have basic conversations in the language they were learning on that app. Babbel is not this. They have quick 10-minute lessons and they're handcrafted by 200 language experts so you can start learning a new language in as little as 3 weeks. Because it's designed by real people for real conversations. In fact, a recent study found that using Babbel for 15 hours is equivalent to a full semester at college. And of course, the best way to learn a new language is immersion. You go and live in the place where the people speak the language you're learning. You speak to the people, they speak back. But the second best way is Babbel. And it's practical. It will very quickly teach you how to order food, ask for directions, speak to shopkeepers without having to consult language apps while you're on vacation. And here is a special limited time deal for our listeners right now. Get up to 60% off your Babbel subscription, but only for Fungal Associates at babbel.com/trees. That's right. If you're listening to this, if you're a fan of this show, babbel.com/trees. Get 60% off your subscription. That's babbel.com/trees. Rules and restrictions may apply. Adios. This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. Hi, everybody. It's Alex here. And you know what? Come springtime, those trees are a-bloomin'. Those people are a-walkin' around. That sun is a-shinin'. And it makes me so grateful for my social life. People are wanting to do things again, and it can be extremely rewarding to start to see friends more often and, you know, go on cute friend dates or romantical dates, sit on a patio and drink a coffee, ooh la la. But it's really easy to overdo it. And for me, it's very important to keep an eye on my social battery. Every time I go on a social outing, I come home and I'm like, wow, I am really tired in a very specific way. Well, that's my battery. That's my social battery being drained. And I didn't really have this language until I started going to therapy. I didn't know why being around people made me so exhausted, even though I love those people and enjoy being around them. But therapy helped me with my self-awareness and helped me unlock some language that I didn't otherwise have. And if you are struggling with feelings and thoughts that you don't understand, therapy can be a great way to unlock the power of understanding. And a great way to start is BetterHelp. It's completely online and it's designed to be super convenient and flexible, which is very important. How many times have you had a therapy session on the calendar and that time rolls around and you think, I gotta drive all the way across town. I am not gonna go. It has, of course, happened to me. I'm sure it's happened to everybody who's been in therapy. No worries with BetterHelp. It's all online. And all you have to do is fill out a brief questionnaire. You get matched with a licensed therapist, of course. And nobody nails it on their first time. It's like going on dates. You gotta find the right therapist for you. It's silly to think that the very first date you ever go on is going to be your future spouse. So you can switch therapists at any time, no additional charge. It's extremely easy. So find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit betterhelp.com/trees today to get 10% off of your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/trees. Happy spring!
Hi, great to be here.
Oh, it's so lovely to have you, David. We've been... Casey has been a big fan of you for... what do you think, Case?
I think I remember getting the David Allen Sibley Guide to Trees when I was leaving college, driving to the Midwest. So that would have been... It must have been in 2012. When did this book come out, actually, your tree guide?
It's 2009, I think.
So it must have been sometime between then, because I know I had it and was getting it dirty before 2012.
Yeah, it would have been pretty new then.
Yeah, I think so.
Probably maybe a first edition, Case.
Oh, yeah, definitely first edition. OG for sure.
Because there's only one edition.
Hey, David, come on. You can't give me out like that.
I've been a fan of your work, David, since we started this podcast about trees. I knew nothing about trees, and thanks to you and thanks to Casey, I now know about 6 or 7% of what Casey knows. That's my rough guess.
Nice.
I'll take it. That sounds pretty good.
But yes, David, for people who aren't familiar with you, and if you're listening to this podcast, I'm assuming that you are familiar with David Allen Sibley, but please, David, tell us a little bit about yourself and what you do.
Yeah, well, I have been very fortunate to make a career out of watching and drawing birds and trees. My father's an ornithologist, so I grew up with nature study and mostly birds. After I did a couple of field guides to birds, I turned my attention to trees. I wanted a different big project, and so I spent about 7 years studying and illustrating all the North American trees. And that was, as I said, I think 2009 that book came out, and since then I've been back to birds most of the time.
And you most recently just put out a deck of cards? Not like playing cards, but like a kind of informational cards on birds, is that right?
There's several kind of spin-off products that have come out recently. There's flashcards about birds. There's actually a set of flashcards about trees just came out this year.
That might be the ones that I'm thinking of.
Yep. And a bird trivia game as well has come out recently.
A bird trivia game?
Yep.
No one told us about that. All of our producers didn't do any of their research out here. What is this?
You need better producers.
Hey, you're telling me, David. Well, David, does it stand to reason that we can expect a Sibley tree flash trivia game, rather?
I would say I don't know enough about trees to put something like that together. It's a fun idea.
Well, if you ever need a partner for something like this, I'm just saying.
I saw that coming, Casey.
I'll help. I'll do it for free. That would be a wild thing. We've done a couple trivia nights ourselves where we just go out to a local brewery that we know some folks at and said, hey, could we just take over your spot for a night and then do a bunch of trivia with all of our friends. And I collect cones and jars. And I took all of the cones that I have and kind of like a guess how many marbles are in this jar kind of thing. I set them all up and said, you can go no closer than this. Guess how many cones I have in these jars. And or rather, I guess how many species are represented, not individual cones. And it was kind of Price is Right, though. You had to go just below. If you went over, it was going to be too much.
So you've actually done tree trivia.
Yes. Right. We've done a few. It was focused, I think, more on the Pacific Northwest. Mm-hmm.
Well, David, cool. I think that sort of answers this next question, but I am very curious, as I phrased it to Casey before we started recording, are you, David, a bird and tree enthusiast who also is an artist, or are you an artist who is also a bird and tree enthusiast?
I would say yes. Both of those things. And I always explain it as, I mean, for me, the two things go together. They are intertwined completely. Drawing is actually my method of studying birds and trees. So it's more, my art is more about information. So I guess if you're into the whole sort of label definition kind of thing, I'm an illustrator more than an artist. My illustrations are all about information, and to produce the illustrations, I have to really study and learn and understand the thing that I'm drawing. And the way to understand it is to try to draw it, and you discover very quickly what you don't know about it. And you have to look more closely, compare different individuals, different species, figure out what makes each one look distinctive and how to convey that in a drawing. So it's all part of the process. So I'm a nature study artist, I guess, is my nature study illustrator. I am both at the same time, science and art just combined, and there's no way to separate them.
That is such an interesting way to put it, that your study of one is your medium for the other. I never quite would have thought about that. Now it's made me think, like, what do I have something like that? Because I don't really draw at all, but I do study these things. But now I'm wondering if the podcast is my new medium, Alex. This is how I learn now, is just by researching to teach in a podcast or tell a story about something.
I think almost certainly, Casey, and I'm a musician and songwriter, and that makes me think about music and, you know, a lot of artists, musical artists and artists otherwise, in order to process their feelings and their emotions and their memories and their traumas, will write music about it. To better understand and to process, and that reminds me so much of what you're talking about with your illustrations.
Yeah, I would say that I watch and draw birds more to escape my personal traumas.
I was just going to ask if you could like find different examples of your birds or trees that are doing certain things based on like your mood that day. Like, oh, well, there's a bird that's nicely, you know, pulling an insect off of something. And there's another one where it's like, you know, oh, I'm in a bad mood, so I'm gonna take a picture of a mockingbird attacking some other bird or something like that.
No, you know, I can look back on and think about periods of time when I wasn't that excited about being out in the field sketching, and my sketches are kind of cursory, not very committed. And other times when I'm really into it and I sit down for 2 hours and watch one bird and do a lot of detailed sketches. That's the first thing that comes to mind in terms of my mood showing up in my artwork, is just whether I'm into the artwork or not. But I don't use the sketches to kind of kind of take out my my feelings of rage or sadness or whatever. It's,
gotcha.
I think as a science-based illustrator, that's probably for the best.
Yeah.
Don't you think? to come at it as objectively as possible. Well, David, speaking of sketching and drawing, as every Seed Pod episode now, we have a gimmick, everyone. because we have famed illustrator and tree and bird enthusiast David Allen Sibley on the podcast today, Casey and I will be embarrassing ourselves wholesale by attempting to sketch a bird. And here's how it's going to work. David, you have selected a species of bird. You are going to describe it to Casey and I as, let's see, a witness would describe a suspect in an investigation. Casey and I are going to make a police sketch of sorts of this bird, top to tail, as they say. Mm-hmm. And then at the end of the episode, we will reveal our sketches and you can tell us how close or how drastically far we are away from this bird, and we'll show some images.
David, have you chosen a species?
I have. I was just thinking as you're describing the game that if I was describing it like a police sketch, I could say it happened so fast. It was big, and yeah. I think I saw yellow and maybe some red on the head.
Yeah, that's perfect. Let's act like maybe this bird just mugged you or something, and now you're just like, oh my gosh, what just happened here?
Yeah, this bird just stole your sandwich at a picnic, and you have to report it to someone.
Yeah, so Alex, do we have everything we need to get going?
I believe so. Casey, we've got our drawing pads.
We do. Here is mine.
We've got some pencils and colored pencils. I heard red and yellow, so I immediately grabbed those.
I'm going to be using these, if everyone can see. These are wooden colored pencils that I think either my grandma or my mom gave to me. I can't remember which last Christmas. I don't know how to sharpen these is the problem. I think I have to use a knife, but they're not really hard colored pencils, so I think I'm just going to break the tip if I ever do that. But here we go.
Yeah, those are more for like, I don't know if you would find like a professional artist using those, but they are quite fun.
I have a connection with a professional artist. Hey, David, would you use these kinds of color pencils?
It's all about the vision.
Ah, that's right.
Not the materials.
Thank you. Okay. All right. This is perfect.
So, David, I guess maybe we should start where you start when you're drawing a new bird. We have a friend, Leanne Pflug, who is a brilliantly talented botanical artist. And she sort of approaches each illustration in roughly the same way. She has some overall philosophies about drawing plants. One of those is to kind of look at the overall morphology of the plant, the big, mm-hmm. the broad strokes of the plant, mm-hmm. and kind of start from there. Do you have a similar philosophy when you're starting a new bird drawing?
Yeah, I usually start with the big picture proportions of the body, mm-hmm. the head, the tail, and then start to build the smaller parts, and then the pattern and colors from there.
Okay. Well, let's start there. On the night of November 2nd, David, we know that something happened. Could you describe to us the proportions of this bird that you saw?
Yeah, it was small, but the kind of a round body and a pretty big round head, fairly long tail.
Okay. Now, was this bird just casually sitting around, or was it kind of actively participating in some kind of activity?
It was actively moving around and sometimes even going upside down.
Wow.
Okay, hold on.
Interesting. Okay, Casey, so far we've got a small round body with a pretty large round head.
Yeah, okay.
And a fairly long tail. And perhaps upside down.
Yeah, I'm drawing mine upside down now.
I think I know. Was this a bat?
Yeah, hold on. Is this at night or?
No. Bats are not birds, Alex.
Okay.
Oh, okay. I get confused because they both have wings.
I'm happy that we cleared that up. Just to be clear.
David, while Casey and I are sketching the beginnings of this bird, I'm so curious. kind of a two-parter here for you. Do you draw every day? Maybe this is a three-parter. And do you draw for fun? Do you draw stuff that isn't birds and trees? And what might those things be if you do?
I draw almost every day, but I'm afraid it's more like work. It's my job, so I end up not drawing for fun very much. Once in a while, I'll do some quick sketches just for fun, but usually there's a purpose. There's an end product in mind. But I do end up drawing. Lately, I've been doing a lot of drawing, a lot of artwork, and for various projects. So a few hours every day, I'm working on artwork.
Was there a time in your life before you had all of this pesky work to do where you drew or painted things for fun?
For me, it's always been about learning about birds and trees. So there was always that part of it. Most of the drawing that I would do would be out in the field, watching birds, trying to draw what I was learning. And I have experimented or sort of played around with landscape painting and painting other things. I've done a few paintings of our pets and things like that. But it's always been, 99% sort of work related or project related drawing.
I see. Like you said, they're sort of intertwined, your interest in these things and the art itself. That makes sense.
Yeah, I've never been able to get excited about doing paintings just to hang on a wall. I do some, but it doesn't excite me the way learning about birds does. So I can sit down and spend a couple days doing a nice looking painting to hang on the wall, and it's nice to look at, but it doesn't make me say, "Oh, I want to do more of those." It makes me say, "I want to go look at some sparrows and sketch the details of sparrows."
Yeah, I would wonder though if perhaps you decided that you need to do a Sibley guide to walls. You could find your way really finding interesting reasons for hanging things on walls.
Casey.
It could work. I don't know that I know of any wall guide out there.
Hey, that's right. That's an untapped market, I think.
Yeah.
All right, I've got another question for the witness here.
Yeah, please.
David, when I see a bird, and I hope this isn't offensive to bird people, when I see a bird, the first thing I look at is the beak. And I'm really interested in beaks as sort of, you know, Casey, we've talked about this a little bit. We've talked about the, was it the Clark's Nutcracker?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And its relationship to the pinyon pine?
White bark pine.
Okay, yeah. And I'm really interested in beaks and how birds use their beaks for different things and the evolution of beaks. So please, would you describe to us the beak of this bird?
Yes, and perhaps what it eats so that we can get a vision of that.
Oh, sure.
Yeah, and you're right on target for that's the thing that birders look at first.
Really?
Or really focus on when you see a bird. Because it's a great way to, you immediately know what group that bird is in, what it eats, what or some more about it. And the markings around the bill, the face, are usually really distinctive. So this bird, it's a short, not too thick, but short and stout bill, kind of multi-purpose. Not as thick as a sparrow's bill, but similarly sort of triangular.
Now, what would it eat?
This is a multi-purpose bill, so it's this bird eats anything from insects to seeds. I learned all this in my brief encounter with the bird, and
so this bird is rare, and also I did pick up that it's not a sparrow. Okay, all right.
Or it's a sparrow with a thin bill.
I see. All right. You can't make any assumptions here, is what I'm learning.
There's a lot of different bill shapes among the sparrows.
Is there really? It was finches, famously, that are on the Galapagos Islands. So are sparrows similar in that regard, where they speciate quickly with different beak shapes and things like that?
Yeah. Bill shape changes very quickly with natural selection. So
really?
That's what happened with the Galapagos finches and with all the sparrows, finches, everywhere. Yeah, it's the birds. It functions as hands, basically, for the birds. They do everything. All their food handling is done with the bill. So picking up and holding and processing food all happens with the bill. So it's really critical that it is as efficiently shaped and sized as possible for the things that bird is finding to eat. So a population that is focusing on a slightly different food source is very quickly going to adapt a slightly different bill for that food.
That makes a lot of sense. Interesting.
So does that mean that genetically speaking, that birds have like very mutable genes for their bills?
There's always variation within a population. So plus or minus 5% or 10% even on just normal variation. And so when there's a bottleneck, like a time of stress, and only the birds with the largest bills survive, or those do a little bit better and raise more young, the larger bill will be passed on to their offspring, and that way over many generations the bill size keeps shifting. I don't think there's anything particularly mutable about the genes for bill size, but just that there's normal variation within that, and then natural selection takes over, and the birds with the best bill shape for the conditions are the ones that raise more offspring.
Okay, gotcha.
Now, David, I noticed that you're using the word bill, and earlier I referred to it as a beak. Is that a bit of a faux pas?
No, they're the same.
Okay.
I guess birders in general, I think bill is more common. Mm. And the birds that are named for their bill, like long-billed curlew, black-billed cuckoo, it's always bill. I can't think of a bird that has the word beak in its name. There's probably one, but they're all named small-billed, large-billed, yellow-billed, black-billed. So I tend to use bill just by default.
Yeah, I feel like with trees, it's the same, where you can have a trunk or a bole or a stem. Yes. Yeah. Mm.
Really, and Casey, I was thinking about shrub versus bush.
Yes.
I will sometimes, David, accidentally call a shrub a bush and receive my lashings from Casey. and a few select audience members as well. Alex here. Here's a little something about me. I love to be cozy. Coziness is of utmost importance to me, and I am in a constant search for coziness. And that is why we present to you Cozy Earth. Cozy Earth makes luxurious bedding and clothing products. And what do I mean by luxurious? Let me tell you this. I now have Cozy Earth sheets on my bed. I wear a full Cozy Earth sweatsuit to bed, and I have been getting the best sleep of my life. It is quite literally the softest material I've ever put on my body, and my skin is so happy in it. I usually have a little bit of a sensory thing. I don't like things touching my skin. Clothes are tough, but with Cozy Earth, I am treated to superior softness, unparalleled fabric, materials, and weave. This is a real endorsement. It's the most comfortable material to ever grace my birthday suit. And guess what? You deserve this coziness too. So treat yourself to the ultimate in comfort and indulgence with Cozy Earth bedding and sleepwear. And you know what? Completely arbitrary, listeners. A little inside detail here. You all get 35% off at CozyEarth.com with promo code TREES. That's TREES for 35% off at CozyEarth.com. Now you go and get cozy.
CarMax is putting peace of mind back in car shopping by putting you in the driver's seat to find a ride that's right for you. Because at CarMax, we believe you shouldn't just settle for a car. You should love your car. That's why every car we sell is CarMax certified quality, so you can be sure with upfront pricing that's the same for every customer. So don't settle. Find love at first drive and start shopping now at CarMax.com. CarMax, the way car buying should be.
One thing I wanted to bring up, which is probably going to be a huge subject, so before we do, I should say, okay, is there anything else about the head of our bird that we focus on for a second?
Well, yes, it had a bold black and white pattern. The whole top of the head from the eye up was black, and the throat was black, and the cheeks in between that were white.
Wow.
The cheeks, okay. All right, I'm going to work on this for a second. Now, let me just get this set. The head above the eyes was black. Mm-hmm. The throat was black, but then around the eyes it was white?
Kind of below the eye.
Okay.
The cheek part.
All right.
Okay.
Perfect. Okay, well, so my question was, we've already brought up a few birds that were named, actually at least one, named after a certain person. And I believe I saw on your social media just a few weeks ago, probably 2 weeks ago, and it's also now blowing up all over the internet. Waves are being made about the renaming of different birds in terms of their common names. Do you want to talk a little bit about what's going on right now?
Yeah, it's a discussion that's been going on for a long time, and with a lot of things besides birds. But a lot of birds are named for people, and the people are all generally all from the mid 1800s, European white men. And some of them with very racist and genocidal history.
Yeah.
And some of them were, as far as we know, just fine people. And but one name was already changed. A McCown's Longspur has been renamed Thick-billed Longspur because McCown was a Confederate supporter of slavery. Gotcha. Another example that I've mentioned is General Winfield Scott, who was a very well-known and highly regarded general in the mid-1800s. But one of the things that he did was to preside over the Trail of Tears, the forced removal of the Cherokee from Georgia to Oklahoma. And so there's a bird called Scott's Oriole that's named for him. And a lot of people think that these birds are named for the person who discovered them, who found the first specimen and recognized it as new to science. But most of them were not. They're named for someone else that the person describing that species for the first time wanted to honor. And in the Scott's Oriole case, it was a junior officer who named it for General Scott.
Gotcha.
There's no evidence that Scott had any interest in birds or even ever acknowledged the fact that a bird had been named for him. And that's just once you learn all the history, it's just a really uncomfortable name. So you don't want to be reminded of all that every time you look at a Scots Oriole. The Oriole deserves a real name that is not tied to one person in the mid-1800s. And the American Ornithological Society just announced a couple of weeks ago that they were spent a couple of years looking into all this, and they had accepted their committee's recommendation to change all the names of birds named for people. And I agree with that. I think that when you look at examples like Scott's Oriole, it really makes sense to change that name. And if you start trying to take it case by case, it just gets so messy. It becomes much more contentious and divisive if you start parsing who's good enough, what did that person do, why are we being so hard on that person. And the bottom line really is that it just makes sense to not name birds after people, to not link that bird that has been on Earth for millions of years, not to link that species to one person from the 1800s. So why not just take this moment and just change them all? And there's a similar movement to change the place names in national parks and federal land. That's been going on for a couple of years, so it's not like the bird world is taking some radical, unprecedented new position. It's just the very sensible position that birds should be named for their features and their habitat and their sounds, and not forever linked to a single person.
Yeah. And one thing that I think is also important about that, that I come up with against trees, is it doesn't give you, like you just noted, any significant information about that thing itself, whatever it is you're talking about.
Yeah.
In that regard, also, the naming of that is can sometimes like make people feel like it has to do with a certain place or time. Like we even name things about like California, but they grow everywhere outside of California.
Yeah.
And it's like, well, could we expand that a little bit? And also, was there a name for this before these Europeans came over and said, ah, that's this kind of bird, rather than saying, ah, well, there's actually people here who had a name for this bird long, long before you came around, and kind of look into that. And the first thing that comes to mind is actually Denali and Mount McKinley. But Mount McKinley is named after the president who had never even been to Alaska, never even seen the mountain.
Yeah, and the town, city of Barrow, Alaska, is now renamed Utqiagvik, the Inuit name. Yeah, so Barrow, who was a European explorer, had a town named for him, but the town was there long before he discovered it. And yeah, there's a lot of bird names that are misleading or kind of useless in terms of information. Sharp-shinned hawk is one. You know, it has sharp shins, I guess, but
I was going to say,
nobody ever sees that. But it's names in the end. Names are just labels, and they're best if they convey a little information. But the next best thing is just to be neutral. So names like sharp-shinned hawk or evening grosbeak, that's a bird that sometimes is mostly in the north. It comes south in the winter sometimes. But it's named evening grosbeak because the first few specimens that were collected were found right at sunset. And the ornithologist who described it as a new species said, oh, gee, this is a species that's found at sunset. I'll call it evening grosbeak.
Wow.
Yeah. And so, yeah, you can see it any time of day. Evening's probably the worst time to try to see it.
Right. That is fascinating. But
it's kind of a neutral. It's just a label. But something like Scott's Oriole is not, it's not just neutral. So, yeah, there's a lot of debate about it and a lot of different arguments on both sides. I expect it will all play out over the next few years. It's not going to happen quickly, but I'm in favor of it.
I'm very excited about that because I think that it's going to be, I think it gives an opportunity to the native peoples here to actually say, hey, great, we actually would really like you to change the names back to the things that we know have already named them, if we want to even give precedence in this regard. But I also think that it's a good thing, like you said, to just get rid of it all and make it all neutral at the minimum. I think that's appropriate.
Yeah, I agree. I think it's a great move, and I bet you anything that we'll see this movement in trees. If not, if we haven't already, I guess I don't know. Mm-hmm. But I bet trees are next. Well, I hope trees are next. I know there's plenty of other plants and animals, but I'm most familiar with trees. Because there are a lot of trees that we have to kind of tiptoe around the common name because they're named after a colonizer, or they're like a slur. We recently talked about a pine tree that was name is a slur for an indigenous group in Southern California. So I'm in full favor of this. I think there will inevitably be people who cause a stink about it, but I hope that we can sufficiently ignore those people and just move on in the correct direction.
I guess it's a little easier with trees because there's no central, no official list of English names of trees. So you can kind of make up your own as you go and just start using the names that you like. And there's already, all the species already have multiple common names
they do,
in use. So
I think that is a fantastic idea, and I'm going to move that up to the top of our list of things that Alex and I are going to start doing.
A nice small project for the next couple months. Well, let's move on to our body of this police sketch. I'm really interested to hear. I have so far what we know about the body of this bird is that it's round. So I've mm-hmm. made a literal circle on my page, but I'd love some more details, David.
Yeah, it's round. It's kind of fluffy, it's not very brightly colored, but the back has a little hint of olive green.
Okay.
And the edges, the wing folded up against the side of the body, the edges of a bunch of the wing feathers are whitish. So there's kind of a white, a white band lengthwise along the wing on the side of the body.
Wow. Okay.
The flanks, the lower belly is a little bit orange, sort of buff colored.
Now I have, I believe, four, maybe five individual colors. So I'm going to really try to do some color matching here.
We should have got you a paint set, Case.
Like a real artist mixing your own
colors.
Exactly. Yeah.
Thank you. Thank you, David. Somebody here sees me.
All right. You said sort of an olive tone to the top of the body?
Yeah, a little greenish.
See if I'm actually making what looks like a bird.
I know, Casey. This is so funny because I had to really quickly Google just like a bird, just to make sure that the pieces were in the right place.
Don't tell that to David.
I know I'm embarrassing myself here. Sorry, but it even took me a long time to sort of understand. And David, this kind of goes back to what you were saying about you use the illustration to teach yourself about the bird or the tree. Mm-hmm. It took me a really long time to even understand, like as a kid, we would draw a stick and then we would draw lines like this for a tree.
Right. Yeah. And the trunk is brown and the leaves are green.
Exactly. Yeah. And then making this podcast, I learned why is that the representation that we know of? Why does it grow like that? We talked about, Casey, what is the, not excurrent, not decurrent. It might
yes.
be decurrent.
Those are the two big ones in terms of like overall shape.
So the one that grows up and then out on symmetrically on both sides, decurrent?
That is a decurrent tree, yeah.
Yeah. So to learn what that was, and this makes me think, David, do you remember any of your big aha kind of breakthroughs in your journey learning about birds? Any like, oh, that's why it's that way, and then that helped your illustrations?
Yeah, and lots of those all along from the very beginning were sort of, and sometimes it would just be like I'd be out in the field sketching, drawing, studying birds, and then be back at home just kind of doodling or trying to kind of finish up a sketch or polish something up and just do something, put a line across somewhere and say, oh, that looks good. That looks right.
That's and it. That's what I was missing.
Figuring those things out. I did discover I was partway through painting all the birds for the field guide. So over 6,000 illustrations and partway through that and studying photographs and my sketches and specimens and the variations in patterns of different species, and realized that the arrangement of feathers on all the songbirds is identical. Yeah, so kind of the structure, the feather structure that all of the colors are based on is exactly the same on a warbler, a sparrow, a thrush, a blackbird. So birds that have a streaked pattern on their breast, that's each streak is a single feather, a dark streak along the shaft of the feather. So every songbird that has streaks has the same number of lines of streaks. It doesn't matter whether it's the tiniest sparrow or something bigger like a brown thrasher, the number of streaks is the same. It's just enlarged.
Now, you said you were thousands of drawings into your book when you found this out. Please tell me that you didn't need to go back and edit thousands of drawings.
No. Okay.
Thank God. I sometimes, Casey right now is working on a tree ID book.
That's true.
And I have thought about this, Casey. I hope, I know you're very diligent, but you know, things happen.
Thank you.
I mean, even
Thank
to
you.
David Allen Sibley, you learned something halfway through and
yeah,
it's fortunate that it didn't affect, you know, your previous work, David. But Casey, I'm thinking now, hey, if you made a big mistake and it already has gone to the publisher,
mm-hmm.
we're talking second edition money here, my friend.
No. If they have to reprint do a big correction, uh-huh. I have to pay for it.
Oh, that's not that doesn't qualify for a second edition.
I
second
don't know
edition,
that
we
does.
Fixed all the mistakes.
Yeah, buy this one now too. New and improved.
Yeah.
It's so much better than that other one.
And I'll say from experience, no matter how carefully you proofread everything, mm-hmm. the very first page that you open when you have the final production book in your hand, the very first page you open, you'll see a mistake.
Oh.
And often on the title page.
Okay, great.
You know, I say get it out of the way early. There might be a title. At least if it's not in
exactly.
if it's not in your name or the title of the book, I think
that's
you're,
all
you're
we
good.
Need. Yeah. Uh-huh. Okay. Well, it's good to look forward to this. I think. But yes, I'm sure there's going to be so many, or I'm going to read it and be like, oh, I shouldn't have said that.
Yeah.
Okay.
Shall we move on to the tail?
Yes.
And the tail, maybe the tail and the legs and the feet can be. Mm-hmm. The sort of final piece of the puzzle, then we can reveal our sketches, Casey.
I forgot about the feet.
I'm legitimately nervous, I will say that.
Okay.
So the tail, I said it's pretty long, it's thin, and dark grayish, like the wings, kind of dark grayish with very light-colored whitish edge.
Is the tail pointed at the end, or is it like a flat bottom tail?
I think it's flat. It's
okay.
All the feathers about the same length.
Okay.
Now, is this your favorite bird, or is this a bird that you
that
have
you just
some
tolerate?
Kind of
fame?
Yeah.
This is the bird that attacked me last weekend.
Oh, that's right.
Exactly. That's right.
Stole
that's
your
right.
sandwich.
Okay.
So, David, let's talk about the legs and feet of this bird.
Yeah. It's got pretty strong feet. They're all dark gray.
Okay. All dark gray. Uh-oh.
Well, like any bird, really. Skinny little stick-like legs, but strong toes. And
okay, so this tells me it's a perching bird. It's a bird that's going to clamp onto something. Perhaps when you saw it, when it accosted you, you noted it potentially was upside down. It might have also been alongside something, like maybe a tree?
Good deduction, Casey.
Okay.
Yes, it was perching on twigs and branches.
Okay. Now, this is going to be a silly question. How many toes, I guess, do birds have?
Oh, yeah.
This bird has three in front and one behind.
Okay.
I see.
Which is what most birds have. There's some other variations. Some species have two in front and two behind, but...
Wow, this is definitely going to be the worst part of my drawing.
Well, Casey, I'm about as close as I think I'm going to get to a picture of anything even resembling a bird.
Okay.
In that it has wings and a beak, and I think
do you guys see what I'm dealing with here? Look at this.
Hey, this was. I tried to tell you early on. No normal artist would use those.
You're right. I am an eccentric artist.
Well, while Casey is wrapping up his drawing, I just want to follow up on the sharp-shinned hawk, David. I googled this bird, and I have to say, perfectly normal shins. I wouldn't think anything of them, and so that brings me. I'm like, whoever named this had to have had a beef with this bird.
Yeah.
Yeah, you know, I don't know the story. I don't know if the story was recorded of how it got that name.
Yeah.
It's extremely similar to another species called Cooper's Hawk, which will now be renamed. They're both very similar. So a lot of birds, when birds were being named back in the 1800s, there were no binoculars, there were no field guides. All the identification and naming was done in the museum, looking at specimens of dead birds. And so things that stand out there, maybe it does have sharper shins than a Cooper's Hawk. Maybe that's one way, when you're looking at specimens in the museum, maybe that's one way to tell them apart. But I'm a little embarrassed to say I've never actually tested that.
Well, you wear gloves when you do. You might cut your hands.
Yeah. I'll have to be careful.
Yeah.
I think the new common name for the Cooper's Hawk, maybe they consider the dull-shinned hawk.
Yeah.
Just
to put it in contrast.
I think
just
that's good.
To make it even more confusing.
Yes.
Now, what I really want to see is some excitement with this, because I know, for instance, that the Cooper's Hawk is kind of an aerial phenomenon, because they fly through the forest at Mach speeds to catch birds, like songbirds on the wing. Is that more or less right?
Yeah. Yeah, they're just incredibly agile in flight.
Yeah, and can see like things at low light that you would never see. Like it's like the Star Wars Return of the Jedi scene, Alex, when they're on the speeders and the redwoods.
Oh yes,
it's like that, except they're birds in the air.
I'm grabbing my my copy of What It's Like to Be a Bird, because I have the painting in here that I did of Cooper's Hawk.
I would love to see it. This is a book that I have not picked up yet. It's on my list.
Oh my goodness.
Oh, that is so like intense. Its head is like at that right angle.
It's like a villain out of a movie. That's beautiful.
Yeah. That's so good. Now, give us one more time. What is the name of that book? Because this is also one we haven't talked about yet.
Oh yeah. Mm-hmm. It's called What It's Like to Be a Bird. And it's just it's a collection of short essays, paragraphs about all the amazing things that birds do, their adaptations, their migration, their physiology, behavior, all related to common species.
Speaking of beautiful birds, Casey.
Yes.
It is time to reveal our sketches. I'm so nervous. David, forgive me.
I can't wait to see it.
All right, I'll go first, Casey, to get it out of the way. So there's my bird.
Oh, wow. Very nice. That is beautiful.
Nice. As you can see, I've got the white cheek and the kind of normal looking bill, and then the the orange belly.
Yeah.
The green back and the and the strong toes. I drew little muscles on the toes.
Nice.
Okay.
All right, Case, let's see yours.
All right, you ready? Here's mine.
Wow.
Yeah, what do you think? It's upside down. That's the important aspect there.
Yeah.
I love it. All right. Very well done.
I couldn't, as you can see, does this look a little like the color scheme we're going for? Buff was the term.
Yep. Yeah, that's a good representation of the color. Yeah.
There's another option, just in case you need to see what it looks like upside down.
Oh, now I see it.
Yeah, okay, see, so, okay, thank you, thank you.
All right, David, well, what species of bird did you have us draw?
I was going for a chickadee, like a black-capped chickadee.
I was thinking a junco this whole time.
Okay, you described it so well now that I'm looking at the photo. Casey, I will say you're a little closer than me in terms of like color scheme.
You think so?
I know so.
Alex, your drawing is very close to a Java sparrow.
Wow.
A pretty amazing representation of a Java sparrow.
Oh, hey, you know what? I'll take it. I agree.
Yes.
This is
Alex, give us a look of yours one more time. I want to compare this real fast.
Sure. Here, this is the Java sparrow. What I was going for
pull it back just a little bit. Yeah. All right. Okay. Wow. That is really good. You even got that circle of white right on the jowls there.
And the gray back and the orange belly.
Yeah.
Excellent job.
I was just channeling a different bird.
Now, that would be actually kind of funny if that's what happened, is, Alex, you just kept drawing birds. And if you're like, well, I was trying to draw the black-capped chickadee. And everyone's like, well, that's actually a spot-on golden eagle. But, so good job. And then we just keep doing that and just have to switch all the names around at the end of it.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't think about the names of the birds. I just channel my sort of ancient knowledge.
Yeah, I suppose that's very fair.
Well, thank you, David, for playing along. That was wonderful fun.
My pleasure.
I believe that's all we got for you, David. But do you have anything that you want to plug? Any upcoming projects? Any current projects that you're interested in letting people know about?
Yeah.
Oh, I have a new book. Well, the young reader's version of What It's Like to Be a Bird just went on sale a month ago.
Hey, wow. Okay.
So it's been adapted for younger readers. And it's, I think the original book is accessible for kids who are really into science, but the young reader's edition will be even more accessible. So I'm really excited about that, and hopefully get a lot of bird information into more school libraries and houses and get more people excited about birds.
Yeah, that's going to be great. I know Alex certainly has it, and I no longer have a version of your book, but I borrowed it from a friend for the birds, and I am just adored. I also got it from my grandparents years ago. I think they still have it.
Nice.
Casey, I don't know if you remember this, but before we say goodbye, can I say the thing to David that I pitched to you early on when we found out we were going to be talking to him?
Yeah.
David, I've never said this to anyone, but you truly are for the birds. Thank you.
Thank you.
Get out of here, Alex.
David Allen Shibley, thank you so much for joining us. And thank you, dear listener, for listening and watching this episode of The Seed Pod. We will see you next time. Goodbye. Our huge thanks to David Allen Shibley. The Seed Pod is produced by Alex Croson and Casey Clapp. Our artwork is by Jillian Barthold, and our music is by Aves and the Mini Vandals. To see and hear full Seed Pod discussions, become a Tremium member at arbitrarypod.supercast.com. Thanks for listening.